Hello and welcome to Connecting Through Heritage, a podcast from the Leitrim County Council Heritage Project. Across this podcast series, we're speaking to Leitrim people who've made it their mission to celebrate the natural, built and cultural heritage of the county. Some are experts and others enthusiasts. What they have in common is a fantastic knowledge of Leitrim's heritage, which they'll be sharing with you today. In this episode, we're talking about the natural heritage of Leitrim. And there's plenty to choose from. The county is a mosaic of natural and man-made habitats. And within these habitats is an incredible diversity of animal and plant life. From hawthorn and oak trees, bees and wildflowers, birds like hen harriers, swallows, and of course, the much-loved endangered curlew. But more on that later. We're starting with an aspect of the Leitrim landscape that might be a little under the radar, and that's the county's hedgerows. Our first guest is a man with a huge knowledge in this area.
Well, my name's Neil Fowkes. I live just outside Auchnashiellin, near to Ballinamore in South Leitrim. I'm interested in all the old ways of doing things.
Neil is passionate about a number of countryside crafts, like woodworking, woodland care and meadow management. But it's hedge laying that interests him most. He's made a career out of the craft for the past 30 years. Neil knows well the essential role hedgerows play in providing shelter and nourishment for wildlife in the county. Like many others, he's also struck by their beauty.
Ireland would be a totally different place without its hedgerows. And I know it's one of the things that a lot of the tourists say when surveys have been done of tourists. What is it that brings you back to Ireland? And, you know, you would think, is it the rivers? Is it the mountains? Is it the beaches? And it isn't. It's the network of small green fields and hedgerows. It's that quintessential landscape that's so familiar to all of us, but has been lost across many parts of the world.
When I spoke to Neil and his dog, as you'll probably hear, the first question I asked him was a simple one. Why are hedgerows important?
They're very important, particularly in Ireland and over the UK as well, because both those areas, without man's intervention, would be covered in woodland. And one thing that hedges do is they act as a sort of surrogate woodland. So they're providing habitats for a lot of the species that would be native to these islands. And also they're actually providing corridors across the countryside to allow wildlife to move. A lot of wildlife doesn't like to move across open space. What I generally say is that hedgerows, from a farming point of view and from an environmental conservation point of view, it's sort of a win-win. That a hedge that's a good hedge from an environmentalist's perspective is also going to be a good hedge from a farmer's perspective. A good dense hedgerow provides good habitat for wildlife, and a good dense hedgerow provides good shade and good shelter and good stock control for the farmer.
I suppose most people will think of hedgerows as part of the natural landscape, but they're a man-made invention, aren't they?
Very much so. It's one of the things that I often think, because they're such a ubiquitous part of the landscape, people see them as being very natural, but actually a hedgerow isn't a natural thing. The vast majority of hedgerows would have been created by man, basically for agricultural reasons, to either fence something in or to fence something out.
Of course, we're talking about Leitrim's heritage throughout this podcast series. When were hedgerows introduced to Leitrim?
The Leitrim landscape, as we know it now, would really have been largely created post-famine. If you look at the original ordnance survey maps from the 1830s, 1840s, just before the famine, Leitrim looked a very, very open landscape. You would have seen some boundaries marked on the maps, but generally they would have been around the big houses, around what would have been called the gentlemen's seats. But a lot of the landscape was open, and there would have been little small clusters of settlements, but the land would have been farmed more on a communal basis. If you look to the east of Ireland, the hedgerow landscape there was more developed, but in the main, the little packets of small fields that we know are 100, 150 years old, really.
How would the hedgerow have been planted and constructed?
That's a good question. If you look back, there are certain historical documents, the statistical surveys that were done by the RDS around the turn of the 19th century, which actually describe in detail how some of the hedges were constructed. In Leitrim, the ground would have been dug and the earth that was taken out to form a drain would have been piled up to form an embankment. So a lot of the hedges that you have in Leitrim would be an embankment formed from the spoil material from creating a drain. And what would have happened then, because they didn't have fencing material, they couldn't really plant a hedge along the top of that bank because it would have been too easily got at by livestock who would have eaten it. So the hedge would have tended to have been planted into the side of the bank on the drain side. So on one side it was protected by the bank itself, and on the other side it was protected by the ditch or the drain, and that was enough protection for the hedge plants to get established. And then once it had grown up, obviously it was able to protect itself.
What then are the trees and plant life that make up a Leitrim hedgerow?
There's a fairly typical basis in terms of the species diversity. I was involved in carrying out a hedgerow survey in County Leitrim in 2006, so I would have some actual statistics from that. But basically, the main species that's in Leitrim hedgerows, as it would be across the country, is the whitethorn or the hawthorn. That was found in 99% of hedges. Then there were three other key species that were found in about two-thirds of the hedges, and they are the blackthorn, the holly and the ash. And then there are a range of other species you would find occurring in different hedges in different places, depending on little changes in soil types across the county.
So what species of animals are in Leitrim hedgerows?
It's going to vary depending on where you are at the elevation. Birds are a species that really thrive and are really well suited by hedgerows. Very, very useful for birds from point of view of nesting, of food sources, of song posts, of protection from predators, you know, all sorts of other species. I mean, obviously one of the key species by its name alone would be the hedgehog, would utilise hedgerows. You've got all sorts of invertebrates, small insects, even smaller mammals that would use the cover and protection of a hedgerow. They're very, very good hedgerows for pollinator species particularly. There's been a lot of talk over the last number of years of how important bees are particularly, and wild bee species. Well, hedgerows are very good for a lot of wild bee species.
If we look beyond the hedgerows themselves, how do they benefit the fields and farms they surround?
Particularly in Leitrim, the root systems of the trees would spread out a little bit into the field, and Leitrim fields can be very, very wet and they don't drain particularly well. There's not great porosity in the ground, but you'll often see along the line of the hedge and for a few metres into the field, you will see ground that's particularly dry compared to the rest of the field. You'll often see fields full of rushes, and round the edges of the field where the hedges are, there's no rushes in those areas. And it's because the root system of the trees is helping the water to infiltrate into the ground and improve the drainage. One of the other advantages to a good tall dense hedge without any gaps in it is it can actually help to prevent the spread of infection between farms. You know, there are certain airborne diseases like TB which can spread from the animals on one farm to another, and it's been shown that a good strong tall dense hedge can actually prevent the spread of those airborne diseases between animals on different farms.
Looking across the country, the planting of hedgerows is no longer as widespread as it once was. When did this happen and why did it happen?
There was a wave of hedgerow planting that would have been done in Leitrim probably post-famine, probably from when the Congested Districts Board would have started to try and influence the revival after the famine, and there would have been a redistribution of land and an enclosure of land really in the county. Then things probably would have settled down for a little bit. When the Land Commission came in again, there would in the early part of the 20th century, there probably would have been a little bit more new hedge planting then. But from that period on, from the early part of the 20th century, you really go into a stage where there would have been very, very little in the way of new hedgerow being established. Then you get through then until probably the 70s when Ireland joined the EU, and you would have seen then a start, particularly in the counties in the east with the better agricultural land. That's when you would have started to see hedgerows being removed. That wouldn't have happened to anywhere near the same degree in Leitrim because of the nature of the land here. The amount of hedgerow removal would have been very, very limited compared to other parts of the country.
Before we finish our conversation, Neil wants to tell me a story. He remembers a delegation of European foresters who were bussed into his farm to look at woodland he had planted. But it turned out they were less interested in the woodland and far more interested in the patchwork of fields stretching out around them.
I remember the day. It was a gorgeous day at the end of May when all of the hedges were in blossom. There were about 4 minibuses parked up, and there were foresters that came down to look at my little plantation. They were from as far apart as Finland and Greece. They were from all over Europe. And they came to look at the small plantation, and none of them were interested almost in talking about the plantation. They just couldn't believe the hedgerows. They just could not believe. What do you do? How do you make them so beautiful? The Irish landscape is just, it's a wonder of the world.
Neil is an advocate for not only planting new hedgerows, but also maintaining and caring for those already on the land. He recommends anyone interested to visit the websites of Chagask and the Heritage Council to find out more. Next up, we're heading to the wetlands in the south of the county. Around here, the curlew bird is part of the natural heritage, and many will recognise its call. But across the country, the numbers of curlew have reduced drastically. The curlew is a bird that mates for life. And around its South Leitrim breeding grounds, a pioneering project is working to protect curlew pairs and help prevent their disappearance. I spoke to ecologist Kate Bismilla about the work of the initiative.
So my name's Kate Bismilla. I'm an ecologist working on this project that's called the Irish Breeding Curlew EIP, which just stands for European Innovative Partnership. So it's basically a 3-year pilot scheme that's been set up to try and address the decline of breeding curlew in Ireland. It's funded by the EU through the Department of Agriculture, and it's basically a partnership between Birdwatch Ireland, Chagask, the Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association, and the Irish Grey Partridge Conservation Trust.
So we know curlew numbers are falling and have been falling for many years. Just how steep is the decline in numbers across the country?
There's been about over 90% decline in breeding curlew since the 70s. Back then, there would have been around, like, you know, estimates suggest between 3,000 to 8,000 breeding pairs in the country. And now the latest national survey that was carried out between 2015 and 2017 found that there were only 138 pairs left in Ireland.
They're pretty shocking statistics. Why have numbers fallen so gravely?
Primarily, it would be due to habitat loss and habitat degradation, and then that's exacerbated by predation. So curlew are ground nesting birds. They like open habitats, wet grassland or kind of rough grassland that's grazed lightly by cattle, wet heath, bog, all these kind of wet habitats that are kind of, they're not uniform in structure. What you get nowadays is a lot of, like, agriculture is becoming intensified, and a lot of fields are becoming improved, so they're less wet. So this means less insect life for the adults and the chicks to feed on. And then also, if you can kind of imagine, like, an improved field that's just kind of uniform in structure and in colour, there's no really place for the curlew to hide from predators or to be concealed.
Why have you chosen to roll out the scheme in Leitrim?
The organisation group of this project decided to select 2 areas that were kind of important for numbers of breeding curlew in Ireland. So as I said, there's only 138 pairs left. They would have selected South Leitrim because there's a cluster of breeding pairs just kind of east of Drummond and Rooski. And the birds in Leitrim are nesting on bog. So this project is also operating on the south end of Loch Corrib in County Galway, which also holds kind of a significant portion of the national population. And the birds there are nesting on wet grassland. The 2 project areas are kind of representative of different habitats that the birds like to breed on.
And in these habitats, who are the people on the ground? Who's carrying out the work of the scheme?
In the 2 separate project areas, so in the south end of Loch Corrib and South Leitrim, there's an ecologist. So that's myself in South Leitrim. So I'm carrying out, like, the surveying and monitoring of the breeding population here. And then, as I was saying before, the birds are so vulnerable to predation that the project is supported by a curlew keeper. So his role is to protect the birds from predators during the nesting season.
You've also involved farmers in the scheme. What's their role?
One element of this project is that we're trialling and developing new agri-environmental measures. So one of these is a habitat option. So it's basically an agri-environmental scheme where farmers are encouraged to manage their land in a way that's going to produce suitable habitat for breeding curlew. The project has been received amazingly in South Leitrim. Like from the very beginning, like there was just a huge amount of interest, and just the farmers in the area were very welcoming towards us and very, very happy, I think, to see that, you know, efforts were being made and were being concentrated in this part of the country to try and help the birds here. I'm always getting phone calls from farmers like sending me in their records or their observations, you know, if they're hearing birds on their land. And even like farmers that aren't even in the scheme, and they're asking me, will I go and check their field for any birds before they mow it? So there's a great love for curlew in the area, especially like when you talk to the older farmers, like they all remember a time when the fields around here were full of curlew.
Right, because I imagine many people in the area will have a real sentimental attachment to the curlew. Does this play into their appreciation of the work you do with the project?
Oh, definitely. I mean, like the curlew have a really lovely like call, and like when you talk to people, like they all know the call of the curlew. Like they'll all tell you it's a sign of rain coming when you hear the bird singing. What's been nice about coming into the area is I was just chatting to a farmer yesterday, and he was telling me like the whole road now, whenever you meet people out on the road, they're talking about the curlew and they're wondering who's seen the curlew and where they are. And like, I think it's created a bit of an interest maybe for some people that weren't really aware how important their area was for this bird.
For you then, Kate, what does an ordinary day look like in the job?
During the breeding season, which is roughly from mid-March to mid-July, I'm out trying to find the birds. They're notoriously secretive birds and quite difficult to survey. So yeah, my role is to go out and survey them to hopefully find the nests so we can put up electric fences to protect the nests. And then to feed into, you know, informing our curlew keeper where the birds are so he can keep them safe. And then on the other side, it's kind of just the kind of day-to-day organising and running of the scheme. So it was kind of a process selecting land to enter into the scheme. Like last year, we had to find exactly where the birds were breeding because we wanted to enter in land that was, you know, either on or directly beside the breeding sites. And then so this year we've got our farmers in the scheme and we're doing training with them as well.
Have your efforts been successful so far?
I think it's early days to tell. And also with such a small population, like there's only 6 pairs in South Leitrim, I don't know if you'd be able to see kind of immediate results. But definitely, like, we do have farmers in the scheme now that are improving the habitat, and we're monitoring the birds so we know where they're nesting and breeding. And like, this is all really beneficial in helping to protect them.
How can people not involved in the project help in the effort to protect the curlew?
Keep an eye out, like, and send in your records, especially during the breeding season, which would be kind of from March to July. If you hear a bird, hear some calling near your land, like, you can either contact us. So we're just operating in kind of a small geographic area in the south of Leitrim, but there's also the Curlew Conservation Programme, and that's another project that's run by the National Parks and Wildlife Service. So they're operating kind of at a national scale, and they'd be covering kind of the rest of Leitrim. So yeah, either to our project or to them, to send in any observations would be a huge help, because it's about making sure we know where they're breeding, and then we can protect them. We have a website. It's a page on the Birdwatch Ireland website called the Irish Breeding Curlew EIP. And we also have a standalone Twitter account. And either on the website or you'll find, you know, an email address where you can contact the project manager. Or even if you were to phone up Birdwatch Ireland, they could pass you on like our details, like our phone numbers.
Kate Bismillah of the Irish Breeding Curlew EIP. Now, conservation and farming. In modern times, these terms have sometimes been viewed as mutually exclusive, but not on the Birtwistle family farm.
My name's Annie Birtwistle. I'm from a small farm just outside of Carrick-on-Shannon in County Roscommon, and I'm an ecologist and a part-time farmer.
Annie and her family have farmed the land for 24 years. They have made it their aim to balance running a productive farm with a concern for nature. And if you were to visit the Birtwistle's farm at Battle Bridge on the Leitrim-Roscommon border, this is what you'd see.
You come up a long country lane to our gate, and then once you come through the farm gate, there's a little stone cottage down on the right-hand side with a cobbled yard and some small stone sheds, which is the family home. And then if you carry on down the lane, you can see onto our sort of marshy ground and bog meadows. And then you go through a second gate and you go into our farmyard, and there's stables and a cattle shed and another cattle shed under construction at the moment, and the pigsties. And then if you carried on down the lane and went through one of the field gates, you would probably happen upon a field full of Dexter cows. And if you kept going round and down the fields, you can get sort of onto the top of the Drumlin and look down over the bogland, which you can see Callows and you can see Raised Bog to your right, and then you can actually just and so see the River Shannon about a kilometre down the fields from us.
As you can tell, there's an abundance of habitats on the farm. And the Birtwistle's careful management of the land allows their mixed stock organic farm to have excellent biodiversity. The story of the farm begins when Annie and her family arrived to Battle Bridge over two decades ago.
My parents moved to this part of the country when I was only a small child. They came over here and sort of fell in love with the traditional practices in this area and decided that it was a real environmental gem and that they wanted to move here about 24 years ago. They were coming over from England, and to come over to Ireland, especially to Roscommon and Leitrim, it was just such a biodiverse area compared to where they were in England, which was very intensively farmed, and it was just very wild, and there was a really good sense of community, and the farming practices suited what they wanted to do. They were very traditional farming practices in the area that we moved into.
What are the ecological characteristics of the area where your farm is situated?
Ooh, well, it's very sort of ecologically diverse area. There's a lot of marginal land which is very species rich, because it's they call it poor quality land, but that's in a regard to agriculture. It's actually very, very good quality land in a regard to the general ecosystem. So there's a lot of very wet, scrubby land, and there's a lot of waterways and a lot of riparian margins and that sort of thing, and then a lot of raised bogs sort of interspersed in between it.
And in the ecosystems you've just mentioned, what is distinctive about the wildlife and plant life living there?
I suppose a big thing is, because the agriculture in this area in general is a lot more traditional, there's a much broader range of habitats that all sort of merge into each other. So there's a much broader amount of biodiversity when it comes to mammals and birds and plants as well. The bog that our land merges down onto, the raised bog, that would host hen harriers. They'd feed on there, and curlews and lapwings, and there'd be pine martins and spotted flycatchers. And it really has a very, very high amount of biodiversity.
Among that biodiversity, what are the ecological principles that guide your family's approach to farming?
To try and conserve as much as we can what was already on the farm, and then to improve it as much as we can by putting as little chemicals into it, and really just trying to all the time bring new habitats to the farm. So, for instance, we planted a coppice, and we put banks up for beetles, and we create scrub patches for hibernating insects, and we cut the meadows at the right time of the year for the wildflower seeds to get chance to drop into the ground. And, we're really just trying to promote as much biodiversity as possible.
To someone visiting, would your farm look quite different to neighbouring farms who don't follow the same conservational principles?
I suppose to a lot of farmers, it doesn't look great because it's not a monoculture green field, which has lush green grass, which is going to fatten animals very quickly and grow them very quickly. It's very much, they're small fields with lots of hedges to create a lot of connectivity for bats and mammals moving around, because the hedgerows haven't been taken out, because they really are a big, important part of the ecosystem, because they create corridors. And then within the fields and the meadows, there is so many wildflowers that it's not just a green field. It's full, well, at this time of the year anyway, it's full of all different colours, and the fields buzz with insects and invertebrates, which then means they buzz with birds as well. You know, like when you wake up here in the morning, the dawn chorus is absolutely fantastic.
So what does your farm produce?
It produces rare breed Dexter cattle, a lot of which get sold for breeding, but some get sold for meat consumption. They're very slow grown, only grass fed. It's very high premium beef. We also produce Gloucester Old Spot pigs, and then we keep chickens and geese and ducks, as well as some ponies for just for leisure purposes.
What are examples of methods you use to farm ecologically?
So we would use, well, I was going to say as little chemicals as possible, but we virtually use no chemicals on the farm, and we'd use herbal remedies for the livestock if they needed treatment for mastitis or worms or something like that. It's all herbal and natural products that we'd use instead of using chemicals, because if you use chemical pesticides and stuff like that, you're very much lowering your invertebrates on your farm. So the hedges would be managed by hedge laying, which creates really, really good habitat for nesting birds and for bumblebees, and it also gives sort of like a staged fruiting through the hedgerows across the farm, so that there's always a hedgerow that's fruiting and there's always young growth in the trees and old growth. It just makes it into a much more rich environment for all the wildlife that lives on the farm. And then cutting the meadows, they wouldn't be cut until late July or August, so that everything that's nesting in the meadows has a chance to raise its young and then get its fledging stage, so that when you go in to cut the meadow, their chicks can actually get out the way of the machinery instead of the tragic end that a lot of chicks have in more modern hay meadows.
In thinking about biodiversity, is this something that improves production, or are you considering it only in the context of being good caretakers of the land?
Very much be both of those things. So in having lots of herbage in the pasture, it does make much better quality animals for breeding stock and for meat production. But it's also to try and, you know, conserve as much of the ecosystem as we can.
What did people first think when your family arrived? Because your way of doing things, I imagine, would have been quite different to your neighbours down the road. Is that fair to say?
So we were very lucky in that the area that we moved into, there was still a lot of traditional practice in the farming community. So there was a lot of people who saw what we were doing and just said, oh, that's the way of old and that's how they used to do it, and didn't question it too much. And there's still a lot of farmers in our area that would use a lot of traditional practices. I mean, yes, there was a certain amount of people in the local community who looked at us and go, wow, they're mad, what are they doing up there? But no, it was very accepting as well at the same time. There was a lot of traditional practices still in place here. So, you know, we were lucky to move into an area where they were still using those practices that we wanted to use and that we're still using now.
Do you see farmers, and particularly younger farmers, becoming aware of conservation and biodiversity as people see the effects of climate change?
Yes, I do definitely see there is a lot of younger people starting to see what's going on in the environment around them, which is great, especially, like you say, in terms of climate change. I think we maybe need to make it more acceptable, though, for people to be aware of what's going on in their local environment. It's almost like there's still a big stigma to be the person that looks at the birds and the bees. There's still this sort of mindset that maybe you're a bit cuckoo or a bit crazy.
Big question for you now. What do you consider to be a good farmer?
I suppose, in my opinion, what makes a good farmer is somebody with excellent animal husbandry, and then somebody who's looking at their farm and the land as something to pass on for future generations, and who's really being a steward of the land and looking after everything that is within that farm. Because too often you see farms where the only thing that people are looking at is blades of green grass and how fat their beef cattle are. And when you see a good farmer, he works with his land instead of working against it with chemicals and machinery. He works with the little wet patch at the bottom because he knows when it's a really hot day, his cattle can go and get a nice cool area to go and lie down in the summer. And he works with all the different parts of the land to get everything he can out of it instead of working against it.
Do you think of the way you farm as something traditional? Or are you looking to the future and thinking about passing on the land to the next generation?
Very much. I think the way we farm is we've taken the good things from the traditional methods and we've modernised a certain amount of it, and we've taken sort of aspects from all different farming systems and taken them and put them together to make something that, yes, like you say, hopefully it's going to conserve a better environment to pass on to future generations.
That was Annie Birtwistle speaking to us from her family's farm outside of Carrick-on-Shannon. And that's it for this episode of Connecting Through Heritage. If you've enjoyed this podcast, have a listen to the other episodes in the series. You'll find them by searching Connecting Through Heritage on the Leitrim County Council website. You can also find the series wherever you get your podcasts. Connecting Through Heritage is a Leitrim County Council heritage project funded by the Heritage Council. It was produced by me, Tom Rosengrave, for One Little Studio.